Welcome back in. Matt Bubala here with you, Radio 720 WGN. I'm excited to talk with our new friend, Roger Bennett. He is the author of Reborn in the USA, an Englishman's love letter to his chosen home, as I've been teasing throughout the show tonight. This is not only a love letter to America, but kind of a love letter to Chicago. Roger, it's great to have you on WGN Radio.
Matt, as someone that has spent many delirious hours listening to WGN Radio in my past, it's a genuine joy to be with you.
You grew up in England, but you grew up with this love affair for America, and especially things in Chicago. You grew up at a time when the Bears were hot, and you know, the Ferris Bueller movie and all these things that kind of were love letters to Chicago. What made you fall so in love with America as you were growing up in England?
Well, I grew up in Liverpool in the 1980s. It's a magnificent city, but in the 1980s, it was a hard time. The north of England had been laid waste to economically. Culturally, the mines had shut down, the steel mills gone silent, the cotton mills, and Liverpool, the port city, had no reason to be anymore. If you've seen Billy Elliot, you get a bit of a glimpse of what the north of England was like. I didn't have ballet dancing to help me survive. So what I did was tell myself that I was an American trapped in an Englishman's body, and I inhaled every book, movie, television show, the band, the Chicago Bears, Miami Vice, Heart to Heart, Tracy Chapman, Run DMC, and they gave me a sense of a life that could be lived in color, whereas my own was lived in black and white. And Chicago, the connection was because my great-grandfather had left Ukraine. He was a butcher in the early 1900s, and like millions had looked to America, and he picked Chicago, as the family myth said. That was the hog capital of the world. He intended to move there, but when the boat docked in Liverpool to refuel, he saw the one tall building on the Liverpool skyline, told himself he was in New York, and got off, a terrible mistake, a stop early. And so we were stranded, marooned, in the northwest of England instead of Chicago, and when things were dark, I'd hang out with my grandfather, who I was so close to. He was a butcher, too. And he'd turn to me, and he'd say, "We should have been in Chicago, Roger. We should have lived there." So I always felt a deep, deep connection to this place, this land, this idea of America, even though I'd never set foot there.
It's really interesting to think about, because as Americans growing up 20 years earlier, there was probably a whole generation of kids with the Beatles coming out of Liverpool who fantasized about England and Liverpool.
Yeah, and there's no coincidence as to why the Beatles came out of Liverpool. The port was where American ideas hit England first. Rock and roll crashed into our shores. And so the Beatles served an American idea, rock and roll, back to America. But Liverpool always felt, all of us felt this deep connection to America because of that. And the difference for me is that I made good on it. I didn't just dream about America. I didn't just talk about it. I didn't just think about it. It did feel like a parallel universe, an alter ego, American Rog who could do things I couldn't, like laugh, enjoy himself, live in the sun, and create possibilities. But as life went on, and I became more and more connected to the idea of America in general and the place Chicago, the book tells the story of how I moved from just talking about it and thinking about it to making it real, and ultimately the greatest day of my life becoming an American citizen.
So let's talk a little bit about growing up as a kid. I understand Liverpool was hardscrabble town at the time. And, of course, you know, you were growing up listening to Mellencamp and his lyrics about the steel mills near Gary and how tough times that the Midwest was going through at the time, too. So as an outsider looking at America, what was the America you saw? And once you got to America, what was the America that was real?
Well, the book tells the story of both. You know, I was a kid. The idea of America was so unbelievably powerful to me. It was animated. I watched, you know, John Hughes movies and just took in every detail. I'd watch Miami Vice, where that crashed onto our shores. I remember watching it for the first time and being like, holy crap. I said to my mother, what's that color? She didn't know either. It was teal. It was a color that hadn't even been invented in England yet. And to watch, you know, Crockett, to watch Don Johnson, was to watch a man. I was a confused teen. I didn't know how to be in the world. Miami Vice was really only about Miami Narcs in the way Animal Farm was about horses and pigs. In a deeper way, it was a show that was designed to show you know, young adolescents, how to be confident, how to be singular. You had Crockett. It didn't matter whether that man was going on a date or whether he was going to go on a massive drugs bust. He wore the same thing for both: a periwinkle T-shirt, a pastel jacket, linen pants, no socks, espadrilles. And you watch that, and that show was screaming to me, this is how you should be. Find a style, a singular style. Don't listen to other human beings. Just be yourself. Be true to yourself at all times. And so I took notes off all of these human beings. They spoke so bloody deeply to me. They animated my life. They made me feel things, joy, possibility and hope, when all of those things, to be honest, were scant on the ground in Liverpool. And I decided to write this book at a time of challenge in America. Obviously, I wrote this in the pandemic when America shut down, and in New York in particular, life felt chaotic and filled with fear. And I decided to revert to a happier time in the past and to reanimate the idea of America that's been so powerful in my life, and then serve it up to Americans in the here and now to create a love letter that I really believe our nation needs right now.
We're speaking with Roger Bennett. He is the author of the New York Times hardcover nonfiction number one bestseller right now, Reborn in the USA, An Englishman's Love Letter to His Chosen Home. You may know him as the co-host of Men in Blazers, the podcasts and TV shows that you've seen about Premier League football. I have to call it football. I guess I have to respect it and not call it soccer, right, Roger, when I'm talking to you?
You can call it whatever you want. I find that such an annoying argument designed by British people to try and make American people feel bad about their love of the game. It's an English word. The show's on English television called Soccer Saturday. And just the joyous connection you feel when you watch the game, that's all that matters. Making memories, feeling a sense of global connection, and just being thrilled by the thing. Don't let the haters put you down. You call it what you want, Matt.
I have to ask you, Roger, because you are very pro-American. I know you love the country, and I know you chose to make this your home, and you said the greatest day of your life was becoming a citizen. Do you get a lot of heat from your countrymen that, hey, this is where you were born, this is where you were made, you know, don't be so in love with that place. This is where you're from.
The honest truth is, Don Johnson told us, find your way of being, stick to it, don't listen to anyone else. And I do live by that code. And the reality is that I wasn't alone in my city, Liverpool, of dreaming about America. We all look out to sea in Liverpool. We know there's other possibilities. Life was full of challenge. But it's not unlike Chicago when I actually moved there. Those two cities are bonded with hustlers and storytellers and romantics who tell different stories about themselves to themselves. And so there's always been a deep connection between Liverpool, which, funnily enough, it's a city when I grew up that talked about becoming a republic and leaving the rest of England. In many ways, we feel closer to America there than we do to many parts of England, particularly down south. So, no, I mean, there's just a joy. There's an energy. I think everybody fully understands and appreciates it, and more than anything, to be able to tell this narrative to America. I think many Americans, my joy is to have become American. 2018, I stood in a courtroom in Lower Manhattan with 162 individuals from 42 different countries, and we swore the oath of allegiance. And then afterwards, we swapped stories about how we came to that place. And these are human beings that had escaped civil war, conflicts, famine, meant worse. Many of them had walked huge distances to be there. And what I gained a sense of are the contours and the power of the American idea. I knew the hope it had given me. I knew the sense of courage, sense of confidence, a sense of possibility it had given me. It had given all these people that and millions more. And what I wanted to offer with this book, Reborn in the USA, a love letter to America, is a chance for Americans who, you know, maybe third or fourth generation have almost begun to take that for granted. And the way it's been received has been the most humbling part of my professional life.
We're speaking with Roger Bennett. You heard the title, Reborn in the USA. Let's find out a little bit more about becoming a citizen, as well as, he mentioned England, the Euro. The final is this weekend, England versus Italy, and his love and affair and connection with the Chicago Bears in Chicago. Lots more to do with Roger Bennett. The book is Reborn in the USA, An Englishman's Love Letter to His Chosen Home. First, let's get a check of the news here on 720 WGN. Pat Pobile here with you on Radio 720 WGN. We're speaking with Roger Bennett. The book is Reborn in the USA. Roger, you talked right before the news there about becoming a citizen. Why was that so important to you? You've lived here for quite some time. Why was it important to fully become a U.S. citizen?
Well, I'm a kid that survived my youth. I painted the Manhattan skyline, a very crude representation, and the Statue of Liberty on my bedroom wall. And every night I'd go to bed, I'd arrange my curtains so the light shone through them right onto Lady Liberty's face. It would be the last thing I'd go to bed looking at and dreaming about. And so I did. I drew a sense of hope, a possibility, a sense of life could be lived in courage, and that I should have been there. Always the family myth, we should have been there. And it's something I made good on. It happened by chance when I was about 14 to meet a real-life Chicagoan who was over in Liverpool visiting friends of the family. We became pen pals, where you write to each other every week in the pre-internet era. I'd write about football, an English football. He'd write about the Chicago Cubs, Chicago White Sox, and the Chicago Bears. And American football started to be broadcast in the 1980s on television, but it was a broadcast as an hour-long highlight show of the previous week's games. So we only found out what happened a week after it had actually happened. And this was the pre-internet era, and it drove me crazy as I fell in love with the Chicago Bears of Walter Payton, of Jim McMahon, of William Refrigerator Perry. And so to try and, I mean, there was to pre-internet the internet, what we do, me and my friend Jamie, my childhood friend, when we knew the Bears were playing, we were absolutely desperate to know. We didn't want to have to wait a week to find out if they'd won. So we would phone up from Jamie's house, not from mine, because my dad would kill me. We would phone up random 312 area numbers, and God bless you Chicagoans listening if you got one of these phone calls. Two English strangers. We'd phone up a Chicago number. The person would answer. We'd be like, hello, can you tell us how the Bears are doing? And one Chicagoan after another for like 20, 30, 40 minutes at a time would give us our own private broadcast of how the Bears. They'd be like, Jim McMahon's dropping back into the pocket. He fires left, finds Willie Gold for 20, 30, 35 yards. He's stopped at the 50. And we would just follow the games by running up enormous phone bills, long-distance phone bills. And that's how we followed the Bears' Super Bowl season, which, I mean, the Bears changed their fortunes. They'd been a terrible team.
Yeah.
They had wasted Walter Payton's greatest years. And then they chucked it, become a swashbuckling, biblically smiting, dominant outfit. And to 14, 15-year-old me, they proved that you could change your own fate. You didn't have to be what you could be. If the Bears could change their fortune, so could I. So their Super Bowl win meant more to me than just a sporting victory. It was a life lesson that I chose to follow.
How did Jamie get away with that? Because phone bills back in the day in the 80s were insane, especially with overseas calls.
My dad would have absolutely gone apoplectic. His dad, God bless, who is no longer with us. I do actually, in the front of the book, dedicate the book to Jamie and to his dad for just happily allowing us to run up the phone bill. And I also should have dedicated it to the random Chicagoans who really engage with us. And I came to Chicago that summer. My pen pal invited me over to Northbrook, where he lived. I spent a month, a glorious month, one of the greatest months of my life, on the beach in Glencoe. Shout out to New Trier School. And everything was as it should be. I'd persuaded myself as American. I'd never set foot in the land. That month, it was like when Ferris Bueller's Day Off came out, it didn't seem like a comedy to me. It seemed like a documentary of my time in the city, just going to the bleachers at Wrigley Field one day, running to the Art Institute, going up the Sears Tower, inhaling Pequod Pizza, Carson's Ribs, and just going on and on and on. And obviously the pinnacle of the stay, the moment that really changed my life, was when I met my heroes, the Chicago Bears, live and in person, which I document in the book. It was life-changing.
You do talk about that a bit. The irony is they're coming back from London where they'd played an exhibition. And, you know, we won't give it all away, but the fridge himself wraps his arms around you and gives you some lifelong advice.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that pissed me off about Chicago, nothing's perfect, is it, in life? And the thing that pissed me off was the Chicago Bears, one of the reasons I was what I was as a human being. I mean, the Super Bowl shuffle, I live that video. I was probably the only English person to own a copy of that single on 7-inch. And so to get there was unbelievable. But to my horror, when I arrived, the Bears had gone to London to play the first ever game at Wembley Stadium against the Dallas Cowboys, the American Bowl. So I was where they should be. They were where I should have been. And worst of all, they seemed to be having the time of their lives. There was a day in training when they hung out with Phil Collins, and Phil Collins and Walter Payton hung out and laughed and posed for photographs, and I've never hated Phil Collins more than I did in that moment. And I watched the broadcast, and the commentator, the broadcaster, just let slip. He said, and the Chicago Bears will be returning right home after the end of the game. And I turned to my hosts, and I said, we have to go and meet them. And God love them. Greatest host. 3 a.m. We left Northbrook and drove to O'Hare Airport, hung out at International Arrivals, and lo and behold, we were the only people there. Crashing the doors open, out first comes Mike Ditka, cigar in hand. He goes, these men are your heroes. Leave them alone. To which I just kept flashing my camera in his face. And one by one, they all trotted out. I met each and every one of them. Walter Payton. And I talk about that interaction in my book in great detail. Suffice it to say, his nickname, Sweetness, he lived up to it and more. What a remarkable human being. And then my hero, I had his bedroom. In my bedroom, I had his poster above my bed, William Refrigerator Perry, the carnivalesque face of the team, a man who played both sides of the ball, could dunk a basketball, could make everything seem possible. He came out. And he put his arm around me, 15-year-old me, and he leant into my ear, and he said, dream big dreams, kid. I did. You can too. Which now I work in sports, I know, is essentially an amalgam of every cliche every athlete says to any kid that they want to get the heck away from. But back then, to hear it from the fridge's mouth to my ears was as if the fridge himself was saying, move to Chicago. And in that moment, that was one of the most important days of my life. The fridge commanded it, and I determined to make it so.
We're speaking with Roger Bennett. The book is Reborn in the USA, an Englishman's love letter to his chosen home. It's the number one New York Times hardcover nonfiction book right now. You can buy it online or in stores. One more segment with Roger when we come back. Let's talk a little bit more about his moving to America and what the country means to him right now and everything else we're going through in the world. More next here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. We're speaking with Roger Bennett. Reborn in the USA is the book. He's the co-host of the Men in Blazers podcast and videos. And Roger, let's talk a little bit more about Chicago. So you came to Chicago for the summer in Northbrook, hung out. You go back to England. You graduate college. Do you immediately, is it always in your blood that you will move back to the States as soon as you're done with school and ready?
I've made the decision. I mean, the book really chronicles it through the Beastie Boys and Run DMC, Tracy Chapman's appearance at Wembley, where she became an overnight sensation. Just her message about, there's no need to stay where you are if you're in time of challenge. Make bold moves. Be willing to leave. Get out while you can. Really resonated. And the moment I left university, I made a beeline for Chicago, the place where my great-grandfather had dreamed of going. And I finally made it there, albeit 80, 90 years after we intended. But I completed my family's journey. And it was magnificent. I didn't know anybody. I had no family. I didn't really know much about the city. I looked at a map. I saw there was an area called Rogers Park. My name's Roger. I thought, great, I'll live there. And it was utterly thrilling and magnificent.
So, Roger, now you're raising four young men. You're a U.S. citizen. They're all U.S. citizens. What is the country like now in your eyes? Now that you've become an adult, that you see things with a different perspective than you did as a teenager. England, U.S., wherever you go, there's problems all across the world. But we've really, in the last couple of years, besides the pandemic, just the social awakening we've had, what is your outlook on things now from an Englishman's perspective, having adopted this as your home?
Look, I've wanted to write this book for a long time. The act of becoming American is the greatest of my lifetime, and I do believe, you know, I have photos on my wall of my ancestors 5-6 generations ago. No one can remember their name. They just have random family myths attached. And I do believe that in 5 or 6 generations, my headshot will hang on my descendants' dining rooms and people will point to them and say, "Who's that bald dude?" And they'll say, "Ah, we don't know. No one can remember his name, but he's the one. He's the one that moved the family to America." And it is the greatest achievement of my life. There's not a day I wake up and I'm not so bloody grateful to live here, to be married to my wife. You know, I get up, I sit around the breakfast table with my 4 kids. They've all got American accents, and it makes me feel so giddy. I'd never take that for granted. It's incredibly humbling. However, I chose to write the book at a dark time for our nation. New York lockdown during the pandemic on the East Coast. New York City was really ground zero for the spread of COVID, and the city that I love shut down. And sports, which is how I make meaning in the world, feel a sense of global connection, that ground to a halt. And so I threw myself in a present of challenge into a past and tried to pick up on moments of happiness and glory past and start to build this book. But it was a dark time that the pandemic segued into the agony of the Black Lives Matter summer, just the trauma and pain and suffering of that. And that went right into the challenge of the election cycle. And what I realized was that the book was almost more important than ever to be able to serve up to America at this time of chaos and fear and challenge, a deep, deep sense of gratitude and thanks and a sense of wonder, all done in the spirit that, as your question hints, the idea of America that has been the central one of my life, which has animated me, which has given me such strength, and I offer up in the spirit of goodness and optimism and hope that I do believe ultimately resides in people. But I do know that the idea I had was that of a kid, and the reality that we live in as a grown-up, those are two very different things. But as at the end of the book, I'm chatting to a friend of mine just after the election, and he says to me, "You know, we can dream about America again." And ultimately, he said, "Everyone knows that the dream isn't real, but the world is a better place when it can dream about America." And the epigraph of the book, I chose to use the lines of the great American poet Langston Hughes, who said, "Oh, let America be America again, the land that never has been yet and yet must be." And there's always a duality between the idea and the reality. And I just know everyone, your listeners, we all dedicate ourselves to trying to close the gap between those two, the idea and the reality.
That's incredibly well said. Roger, the Euros, the big soccer tournament, the football tournament this summer, England has made it to the finals against Italy. It happens this weekend. Does that give you a little bit of a pang, a yearning to be home in a pub, screaming and yelling at a television with your countrymen?
No, I ride with Team America now, and watching the sport that I love, football, rise in the country I love, America, is the joy of a lifetime. It really is. Our women are world champions. Our men are on the ups in the most remarkable way. However, now, many of my childhood memories are of watching this English team self-sabotage to hope and experience shattered hope and national trauma. And I'll say the English people, my family, are all still there, almost all of them still in Liverpool. So I know they have had such a bloody hard time during this pandemic. I mean, their lockdown has been absolutely grinding. And before that, the Brexit experience. So to watch these footballers, these English footballers, throw off the shackles of the past, also redefine what it means to be a professional athlete. When I grew up, these athletes, they were about VIP room, champagne swilling, crash a Lamborghini, buy another Lamborghini and drive on. These guys, Harry Kane, Marcus Rashford, Raheem Sterling, they have redefined, they are outspoken on the issues of race. In England, they are outspoken on the issues of depression and mental trauma. Marcus Rashford single-handedly has led a campaign against child hunger in Britain and forced the government to change its policy. These are men using their platform for the force of good. And to watch the English nation, who have really suffered for the past 24 months, watching them experience joy, rip off their shirts, throw their beers in the air. I couldn't feel happier for them.
We only have about a minute and a half left, but you mentioned that you feel that soccer really is on the rise in America. And I feel like ever since I was a kid, soccer was the fastest growing sport. But it never, you know, it's incredibly popular among the youth. And every kid, every park, there's soccer going on like crazy. Are you surprised that the professional game in the States hasn't taken off more? Is it just so dominant overseas that it can't really get that much stronger here in the States?
You're talking about two different things. The viewership has very much taken off. Yeah, I came to Chicago right before the World Cup in 1994, and everyone thought that would turn football into an overnight success, like the pogo stick or the yo-yo. And instead, it's been a slow and steady rise, and there's now a delirious young audience for the Premier League, Liga MX, for the National Women's Soccer League, the Champions League, and more. The audience here is massive. And it's been the joy of my lifetime to watch the two things I love, football and America, come together in this way. And I'm just a tiny surfer on a massive wave, which is only going to get bigger and bigger. World Cup 2022 on the horizon. This young American male team will do terrifically. 2026, football is coming back. In England, as they say, it's coming home. I do believe 2026, from an American perspective, please God, will be the moment when football's coming home.
Roger Bennett is the author of Reborn in the USA, an Englishman's love letter to his chosen home, and a lot of love letter in there to Chicago as well. It's great to have you on the airwaves here at WGN Radio, Roger Bennett. Thank you so much for being with us.
Matt, it's a joy to be with you. Let me say, go White Sox.
Roger Bennett, an English-American through and through. All right, that's it for the Matt Bubala Show tonight. Jimbo Hannon's coming up next. First, we've got to get you into the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We'll see you at 10 p.m. next Friday night. Thanks for listening, everybody. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN.